you're about to meet one of our favorite storytellers, Kurt Rosenkranz, who was born in 1927 and grew up in the heart of Vienna's Jewish quarter. Kurt's family went on the run to get out of and away from the Third Reich. They had no idea they would end up all the way in Kazakhstan. And here is Kurt to tell us how they got there.
When I was young, I had three passions: football, sweets, and girls. In that order. Chronologically, anyway. As a boy, football was my great love. But in the 20th district, you were not allowed to play in the street. You couldn't play in the parks. We could only play on the football fields, but that cost money, something we didn't have. That's why the police were always on our backs. If they caught us, we would be marched into the police station on Wallensteinstrasse, where I was greeted with a, "Oh, Lord, Rosenkranz again." My second passion was for sugar, and I was a rascal, like my friends. We used to take a groschen, and one of us would go up to the counter to buy something, while the rest of us would just pocket stuff and run away. My third passion, and it developed when I was older, was for girls. But I'll get to that later. When I was a kid, I never felt anti-Semitism. Before the Nazi takeover in 1938, I played football on the street with my non-Jewish friends. Jews, non-Jews, who cared? Then came the Anschluss, March 12th, 1938. Then everyone cared. The night before, on the 11th, we were at my grandparents'. It was Shabbat, Friday night. Normally, we weren't going to listen to the radio on a Friday night, of course, but something was about to happen, and we'd been told by neighbours that Shushnigg, the Chancellor, was going to speak. And he said it. The Germans were coming. He was resigning. And he said, "God protect Austria." That was it. My mother burst into tears. She just knew what was coming. On Saturday, the plundering began. I saw it. Businesses were destroyed, people threw tomatoes at shop owners and made them wear signs around their necks that said they were Jewish pigs. In just a few days, all Jewish businesses, even my father's shoe factory, were Aryanized. And then I went to school. Our teacher marched into class wearing an SA uniform and greeted us with a "Heil Hitler!" His second sentence, "Jews to the back!" We had to move to the last row. In an instant, no one wanted to play football with me anymore. No one spoke to their former Jewish friends. It was as if we didn't exist. All the Jewish kids were soon thrown out of school, and we went to a school just for us. One day, my mother rushed into the apartment, and she said she'd found out we could get visas for Latvia if we went to their embassy in Berlin. By then, it was September 1938. We applied for and got permission to travel because the Latvians said they had visas for us. But my grandparents, theirs didn't come. We arrived in Berlin, and what a difference. Compared to Vienna, Berlin looked like a perfectly normal place. Berlin, the capital of Nazism. Things would get worse for them soon. We'd seen the future in Vienna, and it was ugly. After we picked up our visas, we took the train to Stettin, and SS men checked our papers on the docks. The last words I heard a German tell me were, "Pig Jew, don't ever set your eyes on Germany again. If you do, you can't imagine what will happen to you." After 5 days at sea, we reached Riga. The Jewish community immediately offered to help in every way they could. My parents enrolled me in the Jewish school, which was a completely regular school, except everything was taught in Yiddish. This is when I really learnt how to speak, read, and write it. Riga was wonderful. I could play football, and I made friends fast, mostly with Jewish boys, my age, in my class. The worst part was that my parents made me go to Chida, the religious school, every afternoon, and they made me sing in the synagogue choir. But life went on normally until June 1940, when the Soviet Union occupied all three Baltic states. Right away, my parents suggested that if I wanted to, I could become a communist pioneer. Almost overnight, as passionate as I was about football, I was now just as passionate about communism. I quickly became the pioneer troop leader. You can't imagine how important I felt. A real teenage commissar. But my parents let me know I now had to prepare for my bar mitzvah. The problem was, I was a communist and an atheist. My brother, who was both religious and the family mediator, worked to convince me to have a bar mitzvah. I had one condition. I would wear the blue and white prayer shawl, my tallit, but underneath my red kerchief. Afterwards, I went back to communism. Then came June 22, 1941. The war began when the Germans invaded the Baltics and the Soviet Union. They were coming at Riga, fast. On that first night at 4 a.m, we heard banging at the door. Outside stood a Red Army soldier. He told us we had 5 minutes to pack and come with him. We were shocked. I showed him my pioneer identity card. I saluted. He looked at me. He looked at my card, threw it on the ground, and stomped on it. Communism, I thought, you are dead to me. We were arrested because we had German passports. They couldn't care less that we were Jews who had fled from Germany. That soldier took us to jail. After 2 days, they took us to the train station and forced us to board freight wagons headed east. And this is what saved our lives, even if this was not their intention. Of the Latvian Jews we had made such good friends with, the majority were murdered. Most of them shot, including almost all my schoolmates. We travelled on filthy, awful freight trains for thousands and thousands of kilometres for week after week. The internment camp in Novosibirsk wasn't any better, just as filthy. A year later, after living in misery, we were sent another 1,000 kilometres east to the most distant internment camp there could possibly ever be, in Karaganda, Kazakhstan. More misery, more filth. In Karaganda, my father came down with dysentery and typhus. He was considered a death candidate, as they called it, and the guards took him to the infirmary. It was mostly for those who weren't coming out. But sitting at home, I swear to you, I heard God speak to me. He told me to go and save my father. I ran to the infirmary. I threw myself on him and shook him with all my might. "Papa! Papa!" I yelled. You can't leave us here. Get up! Get up! He slowly opened his eyes. He focused on me, and he shook his head. A few days later, my father, Michael Rosenkrantz, walked out of that infirmary. In this miserable camp, there weren't just Jews from Austria, Germany, and the Baltic. There were all sorts of refugees from Poland, from other countries, even refugees who had fled the Spanish Civil War. So what did we do? Well, football leagues, of course. We divided up one country against another, and our German and history professor became the referee. Another brutal year followed until the war finally ended in 1945. But we were still stuck in Kazakhstan, and it took until the end of 1946 before we were finally allowed to leave. We rode in cattle wagons for weeks, which turned into months. In fact, it was March 1947 before we finally reached Vienna. Vienna was in ruins, and we looked awful too. I'd even wrapped my shoes in wire so they didn't fall apart. When people saw my father, they would shout out, "Hello, Mr. Rosenkrantz," just like old times. I can't tell you how many times I heard, "I saved a Jew, and I saved a Jew." Sure, the thought of it still makes my blood boil. This was the hardest time of my life. You see, the war had just thrown me off the train of life, and now I had to find a way to climb back on. It wasn't easy, but like my father, I went into the shoe business. My brother passed his exams and went on to university to complete a PhD in philosophy. He left and had quite a career in Israel. I also studied women. Now I can tell you finally about my third passion. I was finally getting back on my feet. I was good-looking and a great dancer. I joined the Jewish sports club, Hakoa, so I could meet new people. I had a lot of girlfriends. Then Erika Roth came into my life at a Hakoa dance. Erika and her family survived the war on the run. They ended up in Palestine, where she was married and had a kid. But the marriage didn't work out, and she and her family came back to Vienna. We danced that night and told each other our stories. Erika and I married in the Stadt Temple in 1956. We had a daughter of our own, so we had two wonderful children. Then one day, in the 1980s, the head of our Jewish community called and asked, "Hey, Kurtz, there's a group of Germans coming to see the synagogue. Would you talk to them, tell them about it?" I said, "They're Jewish? What do they need me for?" "No," he said, "they're not Jewish." "Why me?" "I sell shoes." But I went. Now, you have to understand, after the war, I always asked myself, why did I survive when I lost so many in my family, so many of my schoolmates here in Vienna and in Riga? And when I was standing in the temple telling these Christians my story, I understood exactly why I survived. By explaining things to them, I was explaining things to me. At that moment, and for the second and last time, God spoke to me and said, "This is the reason you are living today." I ran back home and said, "Erika, God just spoke to me." She looked at me and said, "Meshuggah." But I told her how I was convinced I had the duty to tell non-Jews about Judaism, about our traditions, our history, our culture, and that I could do some real good in this world. In an instant, Erika understood. From that moment, she stood by my side. On September 15th, 1989, we opened the Jewish Institute for Adult Education. My third child. But I didn't stop there. Once you start, one thing leads to another. And now I also organize Jewish film festivals, theater events, exhibits, and children's theater shows. They are all well attended. And we have created a meeting place, a place of common ground. Today, more than ever, we all have to combat anti-Semitism. I love Vienna. I love my home. But we know the past here. We all have work to do.
Kurt Rosenkranz was read for us by David Horovitch in London. Sound design and music was provided by Patrick Schmidt in Vienna. Kurt Rosenkranz was interviewed by Tanya Eckstein for Centropa in 2003.